Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Hilford, joined by Rich Hudson.
Honk.
And Ewan Patterson.
Honk.
Now, there's all sorts of Goosey-based things happening today, and we'll get to Untitled Goose Game, because it might be the best thing we've done in quite a while. We've had a lot of fun this
game of the decade.
Honking at each other, but there's plenty of other news things to get through as well. So this is just, Friday's going to kind of be our news day, unless there's other more pressing things to dissect individually. But lots of stuff happened this week. So I'm going to open with Death Stranding, because that finally got a big old 50-minute gameplay demo with Kojima narrating various things. And it's just a bit crazy. So before I talk about how much I love it, where are you guys on Death Stranding?
How much of it was piss?
Well, you can make piss grenades. Is that what you meant? Because you drunk bodily fluid. You can go literally, Kojima was like, let's go make a number two. And then it cuts to like a little file filling up and then you get little like poop grenades. You got blood grenades as well? Do you want bodily fluids?
Honk.
Grenades?
Just a sad honk from this so far. Scott, I'm kind of at a loss for words with Kojima right now. I really enjoyed Phantom Pain, even though it had so many stupid things at the end of it. You know, you talk about quiet and stuff as well. I'm just not on board with any of this insanity. I'm sorry. I'm full on Tommy Lee Jones meeting Jim Carrey at the beginning of Batman Forever, shooting for that and walking up to him going, I cannot sanction your buffoonery. This is too much buffoonery for me right now. I'm looking at it all. I'm like, oh, that's nice. That's nice. None of it makes sense, though, and I would like my game to be a little less indulgent.
I'm here for maximum auteur, maximum unrestrained.
Is it auteur?
Yes. Unrestrained creative freedom. I don't mind if it goes overboard. I mean, I'm a sucker for The Matrix, Metal Gear Solid, Terminator, like ludicrous lores. Give me big, dumb, stupid stuff. In an era where entertainment is so safe, I will take the dumb crap.
You'll take the piss, baby.
Yes, I will take the piss grenades. I don't mind. Baby. Rich, where are you on Death Stranding?
I haven't the foggiest. I genuinely don't. As I've said before, I'm very new to anything Kojima, so picking up Death Stranding for me will be hurtling headfirst into this ridiculous foray of crap.
Even though I love him, I don't think you should start with Death Stranding.
No, I need to go back and play Metal Gear Solid 1, apparently.
You really do! Okay, so the thing that he sort of outlined with this is that he finally made a point of saying, this is what you do in Death Stranding. And the main sort of gameplay loop is delivering stuff. So there's a whole set of mechanics around the idea of basically just movement and, you know, like centers of momentum, and you have a whole bunch of different things on your person. And when you're walking, you use L and R to sort of like guide yourself and maintain the direction of movement, which Kojima says is really fun once you get used to it and whatever. And you're basically just trying to deliver sort of packages to America. You're traveling from east to west, sewing the fabric of America back together. That's the main thing that you'll be doing, alongside getting dragged underground and fighting demons and giant dogs.
This is where you find out the end of it. It's not just Death Stranding. It's Uber Eats is Death Stranding.
Well, yeah. the fact that he's sponsored by Monster. They've got like some energy drinks in there. He's also sponsored by AMC because they've got Norman Reedus' new TV show appears as an advert in the game. So, you know, there is all that.
Wow.
And there's a lot of like sort of sponsored stuff, which I draw the line at the sponsored stuff, but I'm fine with all the, you know, the pea grenades and all that. But so the way of getting from east to west or whatever, you sort of, it's mainly just about putting ladders down, traversing ravines. You can fall, you can drop all your stuff, and you run after and get it. And your little baby in a can gets all upset, and you sort of, you know, take care of it, and you sing to it at one point. You know, a bit with it.
So it's a walking simulator with babies, piss, and guns.
Yeah, does that not sound like the best thing? Where have you seen that before? Nowhere.
I mean, you're not wrong.
You know, yeah, you got me there, to be fair.
it's like, we haven't seen it before, but it's not, I guess, whether people really, really want it.
I don't know if people will, but I think individuals might.
Yeah, I think it's one of those games that's going to cater to the Kojima fanbase. Like, after Gamescom and that sort of that reveal.
I was disappointed by the game score.
I think all that was telling me wasn't the case of, okay, he hasn't got any idea what to do with this game. It was more a case of, oh my God, Kojima fans are going to try and play this up as some genius thing, and it's like it's bollocks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's not bollocks, yeah.
And that's the thing. It may not be bollocks. If I play Death Stranding and everything makes sense by the end of it, I will, you know, I'll eat my hat, as it were. But I personally have a bit of a problem with people that would look at something like this and go, look at this random crap. Oh, it's all genius. And it's like, and anyone else would look at it and go, but is it though?
Look,
is this just utter toss that people are playing off as genius because they're Kojima fans?
Any piece of art gets elevated as soon as you put Mads Mikkelsen in there, right?
That's true.
That's all I'm saying now because I'm in love with that man. But at the same time, yeah, I kind of just, it's, I don't want to like crap on anyone else's enthusiasm because, you know, people can enjoy what they want.
I can defend it.
And I'm kind of just in a similar position. I'm looking at this game and I think, you know, talking about wielding the fabric of America together, you know, it's a very nice sentiment to have in the year of our Lord 2019. But if you're going to have to convey that message through the most obscene metaphor ever, I don't necessarily think it's as important as it's making itself out to be. Kind of catch my drift there?
I think that's the thing. There's a lot of obtuse stuff. There's a lot of off-kilter stuff. There's a lot of really quirky stuff that's like, it is under the Kojima umbrella. And I'm interested to see how it sort of pans out. I've been avoiding the story cutscenes because I think that's where a lot of it's going to hinge on making it make sense. But the sort of, the general sentiment that he seems to be getting across is that, like, in the current age, a lot of, you know, people are, you know, divided, whether it be that they have a lot of their connections online, they have a lot of social media and stuff, and he kind of wanted to make a game about that, experiencing a connection. He said he was influenced by some letters that he was reading about that were on Mount Fuji, and the idea that, like, different people climb Mount Fuji and they leave mementos behind, and then the person behind them finds them as they get further up the mountain, and collectively they manage to get to the top and things like that. And so, like, I quite like the idea of that. And he also described, like, a war widow that was sent a letter from someone who was fighting in Iwo Jima, but she didn't read it until 4 months after the fact, so she never knew if the person that she'd received it from was actually alive when she was reading the letter, but she still felt connected to that person. So there's little things like that I think are nice sentiments to sort of pick apart. It might totally get buried in the fact that you make blood grenades and fight giant dogs and, you know, wee on mushrooms. But maybe. I'm glad that so much money is behind such an off-kilter unique idea. So at least that's something to be thankful for.
I totally agree. I think that's good for the industry in that sense.
Yes.
Like, it's definitely, like, you know, you look at the game and insane as it might be or inane, it's definitely a good thing that this project has gotten off the ground that way. And like you said, it's nice when gaming has its own, you know, visionaries, you know, personalities as well. Even though Kojima had a wealth of talented people behind him at the same time, I think that's something important to reiterate. Mm-hmm. I cannot talk today because I'm getting flashbacks of piss
babies
everywhere.
He's had the Goose Game as well.
And the Goose Game is constantly honking in my brain. I think there are definitely positives and negatives to draw from this thing, but at the same time, just my enthusiasm for it, despite the fact there are definitely positive connotations, I'm just maybe a little bit too cynical for this game at this moment in time.
I think it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. I think that the way that it's been marketed is a little bit strange, because obviously it's, you know, the next game from Metal Gear Solid, and this is nothing like Metal Gear Solid other than that there are some stealth sections. But I think the people that are expecting, you know, like, the next sort of step from this legendary action, you know, creator kind of thing, I don't think it's going to satisfy those people. For me, this is the most self-indulgent indie project in gaming history, and like, that's all it is, like, you know. So I'll be curious to see how it goes down. But yeah, based on the 50-minute thing that they put out, there's been a way more of a divisive reaction since then, because they've shown more of the gameplay mechanics, and the vast majority is about delivering stuff. So I guess, where are you guys in right now? You're kind of cautiously in the middle.
It's one of those things. I would like the game to succeed, because as you say, being like a glorified indie project, the ability to just branch out, because we've seen so many cookie cutter games to just tick all the boxes of, oh, we need this, that and the other, because this works, that works, and the other works. Let's just do something ridiculous and see if it sticks. And you know, that side of it I completely understand, but me personally, I am kind of on the fence. I've not completely killed it off yet, and that's mainly because, conversely to what you said about avoiding story cutscenes, the one we got, the briefing one, that was what got me back onto the idea of, okay, maybe this does look interesting. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. I'll have to bite the bullet when it comes out. I don't know. It depends on how deep into whatever is out at the time I'm playing, and think whether I can squeeze in a bit of Death Stranding as well.
I feel at the minute they've sort of done like a bit of a scrabble and gone like, okay, like the vast majority of people don't know what we're making and we probably should do something. So they've done this big deep dive to go, okay, this is the gameplay, this is the story, like, you know, and Kojima's literally out there saying this is what you'll be doing and whatever. And so that for me kind of makes me think that they're in a bit of damage control mode. But either way, we'll find out. I think it's in November the 15th. It's out in November anyway. It's a, yeah, a little bit. So yeah, next thing I've got down is the Call of Duty Modern Warfare beta, which has had a couple of different stints. The one that's ongoing at the minute that you can play for the next few days has two additional modes. There's like there's an EMP, like bomb defusal type thing, where you can revive your teammates, and it has like a little tally at the top of the screen as to who's coming back and going down. So I quite like the fluctuation in that. There's the 2v2 gunfight mode, which is in the original beta, and there's the 20v20 large scale mode, which feels a little bit like they're sort of trying to do a bit of a battlefield. You're not a fan.
No, I'm not. It's weird. I played both the alpha and the beta, and I'm still made up that, not in a positive sense, but I've made up my mind saying that I think this is a game caught between two identities and it can't figure out what it wants to be. On one hand, you've got the slower paced, more tactical feeling elements that they tried to implement, almost like a Rainbow Six Siege. On the other, you have the classic Call of Duty identity, which is rushing and, you know, and time to kill and stuff like that. And when they collide in a traditional game mode like Team Deathmatch or a Domination or a Headquarters or what have you, the game just kind of grinds to a halt for me. I think it's a shame if you're trying to, if you're coming back into Modern Warfare for nostalgia from the first Modern Warfare, or you know, the sequel or World of War, those late noughties Call of Duty games, I think you're in for a nasty surprise. Like, I was playing it over the weekend, and I enjoyed the presentation. Is immaculate. It looks stunning. The guns sound incredible. The actual mechanics of the shooting itself are very, very punchy and very, very visceral and authentic. But the actual gameplay itself, I feel as though there is a massive problem there, where you've got people who can literally just set up shop in one corner on the map, camp, and then if you're trying to rush, you're going to get punished each time because that new mounting mechanic where you put your gun on a piece of scenery, that literally just...
It hides the vast majority of you.
You have no recoil. And that makes it impossible to flank. And the other issue is, well, the spawning system. How we've come through how many goddamn Call of Duty games, and they still have spawn trapping and bad spawns and just things that just kill the equal playing level. I just feel as though it encourages very cheap tactics. And that's not me being salty. Like, I did perform well in that experience, but it was just a case of, like, this isn't enjoyable. Mm-hmm. The momentum isn't there, and I feel as though that could be an issue come release.
For mine, because, Rich, you haven't played it yet, but
I have not been on it yet, no.
Yeah, you'll be, like, I think, across the weekend and stuff.
Yes.
But it's weird, like, because they obviously, after Black Ops 4, that was, like, kind of the end of the superhero sort of indulgence, all the different hero powers and everything. Like, I quite like how much this thing's dialed back. It is weird, because the mounting mechanic, like, where you can just, like, you as you're aiming, you click the melee button and you just, like, zoom up into the side of a piece of environment that's in front of you, and you can lean right around it. That is extremely helpful, but it is, like, you can't just abuse it. But that seems to be one of the only sort of new mechanics, like, in, like, a meaningful sense. In terms of modes, though, I love the 2v2 mode, just because that, for the most part, solves a lot of those issues. Like, you know, like, you spawn, like, 2-on-2, you're in set positions, everyone has the same loadout, and the maps are really small and tight.
I do have an issue with that, though, because I think the same loadouts, again, great. It is literally the definition of an equal playing field, but it is so repetitive because, and like, the thing that I want to draw upon here, I do think that the comparisons to Siege are justified. And that's, but the reason why Siege was successful, though, wasn't just because it was slower paced and you had cover and you had to use your angles and, you know, had to be really methodical with how you chose your engagements. Mm-hmm. It's that you had a variety of different ways to approach a different level. Whereas with the 2v2 thing that they have going on here, it's just two people spawn on either side of the map and it's the same kind of engage. Everyone has their same tactic they go through. Everyone just chucks the same grenades afterwards. He's still going in the exact same corners of the map. Mm-hmm. There's no third dimension to really up the level into something more compelling. It's just the same running at a brick wall over and over and over again, and I didn't find that too compelling.
That is completely spot on. I didn't mind that, but I think that's because I come from the mindset of games like Nidhogg and Divekick and things that give you like rock, paper, scissors, and it's just like, what are you going to do this time around? And it's weird because you do end up in some of the similar engagements where you run up a set of stairs and you know someone's going to be right there, and it's like, who can get the shot off? It is weird. It's a weird sort of mode, but I guess with, like, what do you think, Rich, in terms of, like, the difference between Black Ops 4 to what this is now? At least, does it bring you in, like, where you maybe got sick of the old stuff?
I am still completely open and ready for it because I've heard so many different things about the multiplayer beta. I am intrigued, and I'm more intrigued as to how the game's going to actually play, how the gunplay is, because as someone who very much mainlined Call of Duty over Battlefield, because I can see sort of similarities in the way that, like, animations work and recoil works, I'm kind of skeptical about that because I never really clicked with Battlefield, and I'm worried it might go that way too much. Obviously, I won't be able to tell from what people have been saying. I have to actually play it myself to get onto it. But I'm excited for this weekend to play the open beta, and I'm hoping we get some cross-play in as well, if that is actually about.
Yeah, I think that's the most fascinating thing, is, like, the finally putting to bed, or at least addressing the whole, like, can a keyboard and mouse be better than a controller, Rich would scream yes, and yes, it always
it
was.
Is. It is. As someone who plays,
it
literally gives you like a better. Like,
it's
like
no,
your,
it's true.
Your movement with the mouse is so much more quicker than actually adjusting.
It's down to precision versus accelerating a reticle across the screen. It's the one thing that makes it so hard to go back to it when you go back to a controller and think, oh my god, how did I manage this? And people who can do it, you know, again, as I always say, I've got mad props to people that can do that. But you can see that Infinity Ward are taking precaution on this, because obviously you can only be paired up with people on PC if you are partied up with someone on PC. Mm. So for example, we party up over the weekend, mm-hmm. Scott, you'll end up with a load of PC players
down.
As well as me. So, you know, I'm intrigued to see how well it plays up. Mm-hmm. I mean, consoles, apparently the Xbox One and apparently the PS4 maybe as well, they do have native keyboard and mouse support. It's always down to whether the devs decide to put it in. Mm-hmm. And I think they don't, because unlike going from platform to platform where they can lock away PC for people unless you obviously manage to open the door, it would make the console level, the playing field completely unlevel if there are people with controllers, people with keyboards and mice. You have that with PC because people can use controllers, but if you use a controller on PC, that's completely up to you, but you are opening yourself up to that potential hurt. Completely crapped on by people using keyboards.
It's been an issue with Overwatch and Siege for a while, where you've had people use emulators to actually, you know, you have the adapters to use the keyboard. And I know it's not the exact set, it's not the exact same science, but it
gives you a leg up. What did you guys think of the minimap stuff? Because they initially in the first beta had the minimap taken out because they wanted to sort of encourage you to think more realistically. They have a whole realistic mode where they remove the HUD altogether, and you're supposed to rely on audio cues and things like that to feel your way through a level, which is more like a Siege-based mentality to some degree. But the fandom despised that and they've put the minimap back in. Where do you guys come down on that stuff? I quite like the idea of it being removed.
Honestly, most of the FPSs and stuff that I played that weren't Call of Duty, like none of them use minimaps. So whenever I go back to Call of Duty, I forget to use the minimap. Like when I've got a UAV, I don't, because back when I was playing Modern Warfare 2 and Black Ops on the 360, that was always like, okay, I can always be flicking my eyes up to the top left to look at the minimap and make sure I can see where people are there. Mm-hmm. But then playing like Overwatch, playing Team Fortress 2 for so many years, like they don't have minimaps. They don't use them. So I'm not used to it being there. So the idea of it missing wouldn't really bother me, because I barely use it. I try and force myself to remember to use it when I've been back on, because weirdly I was back on Black Ops 4's multiplayer the other day for like half a game. Damn, no. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I like the idea of it not being there, and I would like a mode in between core and hardcore that is just like core without minimaps.
This is what I mean, though. I feel as though this exemplifies the game's caught between two identities, and you know, the fact that it's like, okay, we wanted to stick to this idea of there not being a map, and now they brought it back in, and then you have the two competing. I feel as though this is a game of so many contradictions, and like, I'm very curious to see what the reception is like going to be like when it comes out, because you know, obviously the single player is caught in controversy, multiplayer is objectively controversial as well. The white phosphorus stuff and other aspects of the multiplayer as well. I'm genuinely curious how this is going to play out, because on one hand, I think the presentation, the budget into it, is absolutely incredible.
Oh, yeah.
It's the best looking Call of Duty. The actual feel of everything is fantastic. But
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I think the way the game stacks up currently, I think it could be a very divisive launch.
I think it's really, just to outline, I think it's weird that they used to lead the field so much, and then obviously something like Siege took off and has been in Steam's top played for like the last sort of 2 years or whatever. And to some degree, like, you know, their little deviation into the superpowered hero power stuff or hero shooter stuff didn't necessarily become an identifying factor. It always felt like they were chasing Overwatch.
Yeah, it was because it was Titanfall.
Yeah.
Titanfall was the thing that swung them that way, because I think obviously everyone from Infinity Ward left it. Modern Warfare 3 made Respawn did Titanfall, and then next thing we know, we've got Advanced Warfare that's going to be the first of the wall running, jumping, all that sort of thing.
And so that was like the big assumption that would be the way the genre went, and then it did for Overwatch, but then like now it kind of feels like they're playing catch up. It's like, well, we can try this realistic stuff, we can try removing the minimap, we can try cover based mounting and that kind of thing, but now we're kind of in a weird state where I'm totally satisfied by it. I play it every year, but like, it's, I think if you played it, like, you guys play way more than me, and I think you will notice more specific things that
I'm down for them reinventing it, because, you know, I always like the idea when you get a different Call of Duty. I loved it, the fact that the three different devs, or two now, unfortunately, the three different devs had very different feeling games.
Right.
And the idea that they want to reinvent the series, like, is I'm hoping when I play Modern Warfare, when I play the campaign, I'm really excited for another campaign.
Yeah,
I did not realize how much I missed it. Mm-hmm. I want to see how much they reinvent the series, but it is a shame in the idea that they're calling it Call of Duty for the brand power, but in reality, they could have called this something completely different if they're trying to reinvent the series, because they're trying to bring in that Siege, Battlefield style, like tactical, slower mentality, but because they're catering to a Call of Duty audience, it's like when you get a Call of Duty player playing Team Fortress 2 and they're trying to shoot through the window, and it's like, dude, you can't break the window. It's like, it's just introduced, it's you know, it's plopping COD players into Overwatch, plopping COD players into Siege. It's basically almost like that. So I'm intrigued as to how that's going to play out. And for me personally, the less it feels like old school COD, as controversial that may sound, I'm more down for it,
because you don't,
if I go back to COD, I'm but so past how COD used to play.
With this, I feel sort of the husk of that. It's like, it's not like it's still there, and like, it's not even like a husk. It's like
they've called it Modern Warfare
Frankenstein.
Well.
Like, you've got half of it is wants to be this old Call of Duty, and the top half's trying to be this new
the
thing.
The legs
like,
running one
what
way.
What are you doing? Why are you running that way? It's literally Wallace in the wrong trousers.
It kind of might be.
It's so the wrong trousers.
I have to see how it goes in terms of, like, there's another few days for the beta. I think it ends on the 20th.
I think it's Sunday or Monday.
Yeah, it's another few days.
This is the last open beta until the release, so it's
totally free, so everyone can go try it and stuff. And next thing I've got down is the next State of Play, which Sony announced for September the 24th. Now, there hasn't been a State of Play since like March or May. It was a very long time.
It was pre-E3, because they showed off Final Fantasy VII at the end, didn't they?
And it's like, they did like two, and it kind of felt like Sony were chasing Nintendo Directs.
Nobody cared.
There wasn't really very much from it, but we've got one on September 24th. Basically, I was going to open this. I've got a couple of little things that we might see, but what do you guys want to see there?
Ghost of Tsushima, please! It's been so long, and it looks really good, and I want to see it again.
I think if they did that, they'll probably do like a trailer and be like, I think if Ghost of Tsushima isn't a PS5 game, then I think it'll be one of the last things that comes out on the PS4, the way that the first Last of Us was. Rich, are you excited for Ghost of Tsushima?
No.
Why not?
I'm not. It's not my thing. I'm sorry, Ewan.
It's not got Tetris in it.
It's not got Tetris. It's not got Tetris in it.
You don't put a right angle in your game. What does it get you?
No roller coaster.
A lack of love for Mr.
Rich
Hudson.
No, Ghost of Tsushima is not. It's not my thing. I've not played any Sucker Punch games, so I'm not like on board with it.
You didn't even get through Red Dead 2, and I think this is going to be what Red Dead 2 was to Western games, what this is to, you know, old school samurai stuff.
I mean, you know, fair enough. I think for the State of Play itself, I will watch it, because you never know, but also,
It's so weird, because for the last few, it was like, oh man, this can be that big thing.
We're waiting for something really big to happen.
And then the Avengers hand came in, Iron Man's hand came in, but it was for Iron Man VR and not the Avengers. And it was like, okay, good.
And then it was Final Fantasy VII. It was, hey, here's a little bit, more at E3. Oh, okay, it was a teaser trailer for E3. Sure.
Part of me thinks that with this one, because they didn't need to do this, they could have waited until next year. Next year is pretty much the year of the PS5 anyway.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the PS5 is going to get a release date or announced or shown or whatever. It would be kind of hilarious if it did. The thing that I think we will get will be a Last of Us 2 release date, because that's the one thing that feels like it makes sense. Neil Druckmann's been out there talking about it and whatever, so I think that it makes sense for them to say that. Whether that'll be a surprise, it's coming in 2019 or it's next year.
I don't know. I sincerely doubt that'll happen. If they've got Death Stranding coming out this year, they will not do Last of Us.
True. Remembered as well, one of the things they can absolutely do now is a massive flex is Sunset Overdrive on the PlayStation.
And that was the thing that I had written down.
Finally play it then.
Shuhei Yoshida was out there getting asked about potential sequels, and did you actually acquire acquire the Sunset Overdrive IP when you got Insomniac? And he said yes. And then the interviewer said, we look forward to a sequel. And he said, we'll look forward to new titles. And it was like, okay, I guess you buried that.
Wow. Maybe they'll take Nintendo's approach even more so and do a few more like, this is in development, mm-hmm. that is in development. They say Spider-Man 2 mm-hmm. is in development.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I didn't even think about that. It's been a whole year now.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. I think with Sunset Overdrive, it would be worth just addressing that and just saying, like, obviously they've had the Insomniac acquisition. They could just release Sunset Overdrive. Like, they just have the IP, they have the code.
Title or something, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like, that would be like a way to sort of welcome Insomniac more.
One thing I think they might do, bring it to the PS5 again, they might do the whole Project Scorpio thing that Xbox did at E3, where they just did a whole video of them saying, look at all these frame rates. They might just do that and then turn around and go, oh, and by the way, PlayStation Experience is going to be on November the 17th. I don't know. They might do that there and say, you know, we'll live stream this. It'll almost be a glorified state of play, which is what the experience is.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe then they'll do... Maybe this will be a teaser for the PlayStation Experience.
Maybe.
Maybe you'll find out the release date there and then for whatever.
The experience is way bigger, and I think that like the last couple have been like majority like indie showcases or not that much to take away. So it's like if they want the state of play to be up there with a Nintendo Direct, then they need to bring it because the last couple of Directs have been brilliant.
I mean, is even like Nintendo's indie Direct, is it Indie World thing?
I think so.
And they showed off like Ori, and it's like they are not messing around. I think it was an indie Direct that showed off Cuphead. It's like their sub Direct thing is better than the state of play.
Yeah. But it's like Nintendo has shown that you can take like what would be an E3 showcase or a conventional showcase and just stream it out in like sort of 10-15 minute chunks, and you can still get the headlines, you still get the buzz. There's a way for that to work. The next thing I've got down is the Alan Wake remaster, which sort of popped up on a CV on someone who was on LinkedIn, who's apparently working for this company called Virtuous Studio. They've been hired to do various remasters in the past. There's a whole bunch of Googling that you can do to find out.
Why didn't you lead with that, Scott?
I'm not leading with the Alan Wake. It's not completely sure, but it might be a thing. I thought we'd talk around it as opposed to saying that it's confirmed.
I've not played Control yet, but I absolutely adore Alan Wake.
And
I'm going to be made up if that is actually
the dude that plays Alan Wake is in Control.
That's sick. I mean, Alan Wake, I'm really hyped for. I mean, I've gone from being like, oh, there can't be arse of remasters to Ghostbusters remastered, Alan Wake remastered. Oh my god, yes, just hook it into my veins.
Also, PSA, go play Control. It's phenomenal. Mm. It ends badly, but there's DLC coming that I think will make it work. But that game's control scheme is phenomenal, especially if you like the character
control.
Of Dark Phoenix.
Scheme.
Control scheme. Hey, if they did a PR burst called Control Scheme, it would have made a whole load of sense. But Control is, Remedy's latest game, plays fantastically, but the general sort of rumors that there is going to be an Alan Wake remaster, makes perfect sense, because one of the DLC packs for Control is an Alan Wake DLC. It's called AWE, but inside the artwork is the Alan Wake box art. It's him standing with his torch. So he's definitely coming back. Plus, that character is in Control in terms of he leaves diaries for
the world did not deserve Alan Wake when it came out.
I absolutely loved it.
And everyone was like, it's okay, I guess. And I'm like, what are you on about?
It's okay. I love like everything about it other than the way that I thought it didn't resolve itself very well. It doesn't matter anyway. I thought that it always had more potential. I think it was in a weird spot because it was tied to Xbox when it didn't need to be. If it came out this time, assumedly, because I think Remedy have gone independent, it would be able to come out on everything, which makes way more sense. And given the sort of like the boost of the new hardware, it would be even smoother and whatever. So I think with Control coming out and with the DLC on the cards, it makes perfect sense to remind everybody of what Alan Wake is. One of the last couple of things, Rockstar have finally sort of made Red Dead Online like it's finally sort of worth playing. It's worth downloading 90 gigs of Red Dead to go back
to.
With the what the hell's the name of the thing?
Frontier Pursuits.
Which like Ewan will not stop badgering us about. So tell us, Ewan.
Mate, I got a dog in the game the other day. It's great.
I've called it Dag.
So I've got a dog called Dag. And I've just been bounty hunting with my cousin on Red Dead Online. It's great fun. It's like, genuinely, having sweated out that game for so long, the online stuff, just trying to make your own fun. And now that they've actually got a solid foundation to crack on and make that experience what they'd intended it to be, this is only just the beginning, and it's already like so enjoyable to play. The bounty hunting can be a little bit repetitive occasionally, but they've added in new ways of tracking bounties, so you have different scenarios each time. Sometimes you have to go to a hideout and stake it out and wait for the bounty to get in. Other times you have to go to a crime scene and investigate stuff and then track them down. I had one yesterday where someone was hiding out at one of the plantations, and I tracked down the thing, and I was analyzing the evidence. I found a trail, and it was leading into a barn, and I walked in, opened up the door, and the guy was there, and I just drew my gun because he started shooting at me. Usually you try and take them alive, but I couldn't, so I just had to take my gun out and fan him down. I was like, I could have killed that man. I've got less of a payout, but it was a really satisfying experience. Mm-hmm. So I'm here for it. And like, there's just so much stuff going into that right now in all the different roles that they could expand that for ages. And obviously as well, completely forgot to mention this because I put it in the gaming chat yesterday, but some people have spotted some zombie stuff.
I saw that.
Yeah. Undead Nightmare 2.
So if they make Undead an online supernatural expansion, because it won't be single player, because they won't be able to monetize it. You know, Rockstar are basically sacked off single player completely now. but if they manage to do an online Undead Nightmare effectively, that would, or just an event for Halloween where they get a promise on all the supernatural Easter eggs that are in the single player. Because Red Dead 2 is a spooky game.
I was
going
to say there's aliens, yeah. There's werewolves.
Yeah. Witches, mutant hog things, feral hog things. So yeah, if they could do that in the online, like, I think Red Dead could absolutely have an amazing end of 2019. Mm-hmm.
Rich has just sold you on the idea of Red Dead Online.
No.
90.
He doesn't want to be a cowboy, baby.
I want to be a cowboy, baby. No, I got a bit into Red Dead single player. I don't pay for Plus, so I wouldn't be able to play online anyway.
Fair.
But and I tried GTA Online when that was still a thing. But like,
it's nothing like GTA Online.
No, I think you've swayed me more.
That's the thing about it. Like, it's good to see that they've got it to this point, because I think obviously when it launched, I know that a lot of people in the office were very much onto it, and they were on it from launch, and mm-hmm. and people were saying it wasn't great. But was it because of the fact that people had such high expectations because of how successful GTA Online has been?
Mm-hmm. It seems to be. Yeah.
But if they can get it to that point where you think, okay, now this is where it's going to be worth playing like properly from here on out. And they drop in an Undead Nightmare thing, that's going to obviously draw people back in. So yeah, is Rockstar playing their cards very, very well?
Now with the Frontier thing, there are specific roles for you to play. There's like a specific structure that you're plugging yourself into. Whereas the thing that it had at launch was like, yeah, it's Red Dead Online in a literal sense. It's Red Dead and you're online and you can like group up and do some missions together. But it didn't really feel especially rewarding, and the gold system was a bit weird and it wasn't very well balanced and whatever. So like the idea of a whole online, you know, living the old west life, and you bring all the immersion across from the single player, like that's brilliant.
It's class.
It should have been there before.
And like the divergent gameplay that's on offer is really interesting as well. So one of the tiers, I'm on Bounty Hunter right now. I'm not a promising Bounty Hunter. I was a novice, but now I'm promising. So there we go. When you get to the, I do. I have the reinforced rope.
I knew it.
When you get to the max rank, if another player in the session has been misbehaving, they actually become known to you as a bounty, and you can go track down that other player.
That's from the division. That's great.
Which is really, really cool, because that gives you an insanely high payout for that one. Whereas now, at the moment, they're introducing a thing each week where you have legendary bounties, where each week there is an event where you have a bit of narrative to the bounty hunter thing, where you're tracking down several different characters in different regions. So right now there's one, it's the leader of the Del Lobos gang in the deep south, and you've got to go track them down and then bring them in, and you can keep doing that and get a higher, and the difficulty increases each time. And they're doing one legendary bounty, and I think there's going to be 10 in total for each week until the end of the year. And I imagine that they could do that with the different legendary things for the trader or the collector. The collector stuff's actually pretty fun as well.
I was going to say, I like that you can pick a role, like, because it's being a bounty hunter in that setting is like pretty badass anyway, so it's like they give you a whole sort of like progression based on that. Like, that's pretty rewarding. I like the challenge of it, the different targets.
I do wonder if they might introduce other roles as well. I have no idea what those roles could be.
Hat maker,
trapper, maybe. I don't know.
Alligator hats.
Yeah. Fisherman, maybe. because right now they have so many different things on offer, and I'll be very intrigued to see how else they'll expand it going forward. Because obviously, when GTA Online got to its zenith of popularity, you had careers for people doing biker gang stuff. You had careers for people who had like a high society crew theme. You had all sorts going on.
Oh man, if you want to cement how much of GTA Online is its own beast, like check out Noclip's documentary on GTA 5. There's this whole thing about an entire group of people that meet up in real life, have barbecues together, and then they live all these digital lives online. It's insane how much people live in GTA Online. But yeah, we can end on a honking good game because we're all going to be playing a bit of Goose Game across the weekend. So Untitled Goose Game from House, great name, apparently made by four people, has finally come out on the Friday, and we sort of played a little chunk of it this morning. Just, it's a weird game in terms of, it's a nice little indie release, but it was trending on Twitter, and it's kind of got like
huge because it's just so ridiculously silly. It's like, I think you put it, you in like Goat Simulator with a purpose,
but it's and way better made.
It's like with Goat Simulator, it was like an intended mania that almost reminded me of like 2010 I'm So Random, lol, pay attention.
It's like a medium come to life.
Whereas Goose Game is so unabashedly sincere about its, you know, its purpose. You literally are playing a goose, and there's just, all the colors are simple. You play like a goose would play. Right. You're not there flying through the air with rocket powered whatever on the back, and you're just messing with
people
in a quaint little English village. It's brilliant.
It's even just like literally playing like like 5-10 minutes of it today because it only literally only came out like a couple of hours ago.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously we're at work. We can't sit and play games.
Get it on the tree.
Contrary to popular opinion. Uh-huh. And just playing it a little bit, it's just like this is going to be such a good time. I just want to go home and play Goose Game.
So it's like
I just want to go home and be a great bastard.
And praise the House Arts for releasing this on a Friday as well.
Yes.
After a long week of the content, you get back home just.
It's like I've got that and the Modern Warfare beta to deal with, and it's like I don't know what do I do. Yeah. Do I kill people and be like, okay, this is fine, or do I just steal sandwiches and honk?
You do both.
What do I do?
You want to balance it. I was gonna say I'm so glad gaming is back because we have most of the summer it took off, but now there's like Borderlands 3, Link's Awakening, Goose Game.
Yeah.
There's an absolute ton that's sort of, and the Modern Warfare beta and whatever. There's an absolute ton that are all out within the same. It always does that thing where the industry is like, hey, by the way, here's 5 must play things on the same like 3-day period or whatever.
That's
At least there's plenty to go back and forth between. And I love that there's the contrast between the insanity of Borderlands 3, the serious multiplayer insanity or intensity of Modern Warfare, and then just a goose game. You can just go
big
goose.
I'm not going to lie, I think people are like so excited for this game. Yeah. As you say, it's trending on Twitter. Like as soon as we first saw this game, everyone just went, I need this.
It's one of those it's one of those things where it's so obviously appealing to the vast majority of demographics. Like, who doesn't want to be a banter goose? Just running around stealing stuff and like, you know, messing with a farmer and nicking his keys and all that. So
I hope we have historical DLC where you're going into, I would love an alternate history where you're in Charles Dickens' Scrooge, but instead of being the goose, you see the goose in the big window and you're like, get revenge on Scrooge.
I was going to say, you've got to avoid being cooked for the Christmas DLC.
I mean, just give me, I mean, obviously, we don't know how long this game is actually going to be, but like
100 hours.
Just give me all the Goose Game.
It's a good time. But yeah, let us know anything down in the comments below if you've picked up Goose Game or what you think of the rest of the story so far. And also come find us on social media if you're listening on the audio platforms. Rich is going to queue up a bit of goose noise.
I'm going to queue up a honk.
Because now, this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Rich Hudson.
Thanks for listening.
And Ewan Patterson.
Bye.
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 Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.